You've tuned in to Naturopathy Earth Radio in occult health news, where you get the latest on medical cover-ups, government malfeasance, toxins being put in our food and home, as well as sound, clean eating principles. We are here to cast a light on what the big sick care industry and its government shills don't want you to know. Don't be a slave to Big Pharma. Break free of shackles of Big Food and start your journey now on a long, purposeful life. Become a citizen of Naturopathy Earth. Here's your host, A. Gregory Luna.
Hello, everybody. This is A. Gregory Luna. Of course, you can call me Gregory. Welcome back to another episode of Naturopathy Earth Radio and Occult Health News. I hope you're doing well on this Monday in mid-July. Perhaps you're listening to this while at the beach, or perhaps you're somewhere cold. Perhaps you're having World Cup hangover, or you're just in the boring, stultifyingly boring commute going to work. Or maybe you're working out. Either way, I always appreciate you listening in. Every time you subscribe on the website, which is naturopathicearth.com, I send you a copy of my memoir, Confessions of an Obese Child, and I also email you, and I love getting feedback from you guys. And it's great actually corresponding with you guys and fleshing you guys out and asking you guys for tips and advice, and you give me your life history. So it's great. So guys, anytime you want to contact me, my email is available through the website. There's a contact me tab, but of course on social media, you can contact me anytime and I will always respond. So today we're going down the mental health road because I have a fondness for mental health topics, and in particular, NPD or narcissistic personality disorder. Oh, this one hits me hard. So I thought it'd be good to cover this so you guys are warned about these people, these soulless vampire people. So if you need to lose weight, contact me. I've lost a lot of weight and kept it off. I'm a certified health coach, as you guys know. So contact me through there. And of course, we do have our Patreon account, which we would appreciate if you could donate a couple of dollars a month to that. All right, let's get started. Oh, before I forget, while I'm recording this, the World Cup final is between France and tiny mountainous alpine Croatia. I foresee a couple of things here. France is probably going to squash them. Croatia is extremely tired. They've played three overtime games in soccer terminology. But it'd be great. I'm rooting for Croatia. I'm rooting for the Cinderella. I'm not a big fan of the French. The French are very talented, and I'm sure every English fan here is probably rooting for Croatia because the French and the English historically have not gone along. So the next episode, I'll comment on the final, but I am rooting for Croatia in this final. And when you're listening to this, it's already occurred because it was on Sunday. Let's get to it. Okay, so every year with my students, I add essentially a section on mental health disorders. And I think this is very important because, I mean, we cover depression, we cover anxiety, we cover the major ones, we have to cover eating disorders. But I like to add what are classified by the Diagnostic Statistical Manual on Mental Health Disorders, the DSM, the Cluster B personality disorders. And under the Cluster B personality disorders, we have borderline personality disorder, narcissistic personality disorder, and antisocial personality disorder, and there's histrionic personality disorder. I mean, there's other ones, but those are really the big three. So antisocial is typically, I guess, best exemplified as the serial killer, even though there's a lot of nuance to that. Just because you've been diagnosed as antisocial does not mean you're going to be a serial killer. But if I have to, like, epitomize it, borderline is best exemplified by the movies Fatal Attraction or Obsessed with Beyonce or The Roommate with Minka Kelly, the crazy person with no boundaries who, after you break off the relationship, they go and they kill your pet or they try to kill you or they stalk you forever. Now, narcissistic personality disorder is a little different. We use the term narcissist quite often, especially now that Donald Trump is a president, because he exemplifies kind of the typical narcissist. But the narcissistic personality disorder is a lot more complex. And we're going to go over the basic tenets of it. And I am going to glean from an article, even though I could just go off the top of my head, because I'm pretty well acquainted with NPD because I've had experiences with these people, these soulless vampire people. And going back full circle to why I add this to the curriculum is because these students, these people, are going to encounter borderline, and in particular borderline and narcs, in their lifetime. And it's extremely important, even at the age of 18, to recognize the signs and symbols and the traits and the MO, the modus operandi that these people use to ensnare you in. Because if you are armed with the knowledge ahead of time, you're less likely to fall for them. That's why I do add this to the curriculum, because I find it to be extremely important. Because if you ever are involved with a narc or a borderline, they can literally ruin your life. I mean, it could get to the point where they kill you, like especially with borderlines. But they can ruin you. And more often than not, even if you can extricate yourself from these people, they destroy your trust of the opposite sex. If you're dating one of these people, they could be coworkers or friends, but typically it's going to be romantic relationships, and they will devastate you. All right, so let's talk about NPD here, which is narcissistic personality disorder. Are you in a frustrating relationship with someone who expects constant attention and admiration, but doesn't seem able to take your needs and feelings into consideration? Someone who thinks they're better than everyone else and should be treated accordingly? Who dishes out insults and condescension, but flies off the handle at the slightest disagreement or whiff of criticism? If so, you might be dealing with a narcissist. Learn what you need to know about narcissistic personality disorder so you can spot the narcissist in your life, protect yourself from their power plays, and establish healthier boundaries. Because, yeah, you might have a narc in your life, and let's say they're a parent or the baby daddy or baby mama, and you can't completely eschew them from your life, so you have to have good, healthy boundaries. So what is NPD? The word narcissism gets tossed around a lot in our selfie-obsessed, celebrity-driven culture. Often it describes someone who seems exclusively vain or full of themselves. But in psychological terms, narcissism doesn't mean self-love, at least not of a genuine sort. It's more accurate to say that people with narcissistic personality disorder are in love with an idealized, grandeur image of themselves. And they're in love with this inflated self-image precisely because it allows them to avoid deep feelings of insecurity. But propping up their delusions of grandeur takes a lot of work, and that's where their dysfunctional attitudes and behaviors come in. So narcs essentially are, and this is typically caused by trauma. It's childhood trauma that causes this. They don't have an idea, an identity of who they are. And so they have to devise an identity. And later on, when they're getting their victims, because none of their self-worth can come from themselves because they have no inherent self-worth, they have to tap into other people to suck out their self-worth. So we're going to talk about that when we talk about the three cycles of the narcissistic personality disorder if you're in a relationship with them. So NPD involves a pattern of self-centered, arrogant thinking and behavior, a lack of empathy and consideration for other people, and an excessive need for admiration. Others often describe people with NPD as cocky, manipulative, selfish, patronizing, and demanding. This way of thinking and behaving can be seen in every area of the narcissist's life, from work and friendships to family and love relationships. People with NPD are extremely resistant to changing their behavior, even when it's causing them problems. Part of the time, because they can't. They don't know how to do it. I mean, they are devoid of any ability to do it. Their tendency is to turn the blame onto others. What's more, they're extremely sensitive and react badly to even the slightest criticism, disagreements, or perceived slights, which they view as personal attacks. For the people in the narcissist's life, it's often easier just to go along with their demands to avoid the coldness and rages. Okay, signs of an NPD person. Grandeur, sense of self-importance. Grandiosity is a defining characteristic of narcissism. More than just arrogance or vanity, grandiosity is an unrealistic sense of superiority. Narcissists believe they are unique or special and can only be understood by other special people, like the cognoscenti. What's more, they are too good for anything average or ordinary. They only want to associate and be associated with other high-status people, places, and things. Narcissists also believe that they're better than everyone else and expect to be recognized as such, even when they've done nothing to earn that recognition. They often exaggerate or outright lie about their achievements and talents. And when they talk about work or relationships, all you hear is how much they do, how great they are, and how lucky the people in their lives are to have them. They are the undisputed star, and everyone else is a bit player. So like a narcissist has an unrealistic view of their own talent. So you could see this, let's say, in school, like on a soccer team, where a narc would be like, oh, I'm the best player. I'm the best scorer. The whole team revolves around me. If I didn't play, the school would shut down. And, you know, they maybe have 3 goals in the entire season. So that's kind of an example of the grandiose sense of importance. Or at work, you know, this place wouldn't function without me. And everyone looks around like, you don't know what you're talking about. And connected to this, they have a belief, and with male narcs, it's more of accomplishment driven, and with female narcs, it's more of the beauty. It's the beauty where they have this perceived view of themselves as being more beautiful and more charming and more beguiling than everybody else. And with the men, it's more about the accomplishments. The second symptom is they live in a fantasy world that supports their delusions of grandeur. Since reality doesn't support their grandeur view of themselves, narcissists live in a fantasy world propped up by distortion, self-deception, and magical thinking. They spin self-glorifying fantasies of unlimited success, power, brilliance, attractiveness, and ideal love that can make them feel special and in control. These fantasies protect them from feelings of inner emptiness and shame, so facts and opinions that contradict them are ignored or rationalized away. Anything that threatens to burst the fantasy bubble is met with extreme defensiveness and even rage. So those around the narcissist learn to tread carefully around their denial of reality. So go back to the soccer example. If you tell that person, actually, you only have 3 goals, you know, lots of times the narc will rage, or they'll gaslight, or they'll be in extreme denial. So they have to kind of live in this strange, deluded world where they are the undisputed master and everyone admires them and they're surrounded by sycophants. The third symptom is needs constant praise and admiration. So a narcissist's sense of superiority is like a balloon that gradually loses air without a steady stream of applause and recognition to keep it inflated. The occasional compliment is not enough. Narcissists need constant food for their ego. We call that narcissistic supply. So they surround themselves with people who are willing to cater to their obsessive craving for affirmation. These relationships are very one-sided, right? It's all about me, tell me how great I am, tell me I'm the best. It's all about what the admirer can do for the narcissist, never the other way around. And if there's ever an interruption or diminishment in the admirer's attention or praise, the narcissist treats it as a betrayal. A great example of some of the narcissism from movies would be Gaston from the original Beauty and the Beast, the cartoon version. And of course, the song Gaston is a great encapsulation of what the narcissist thinks and how they feel. But they typically will surround themselves with sycophants or inferior people or subordinates. So, because they need this narcissistic supply about how great and how awesome they are, and they need to, like I mentioned, live in this deluded fantasy world where they can perpetuate this idea. So I play a little Family Feud game with the students after we cover NPD, and I tell them, okay, what are the 5 occupations that narcissists are attracted to? So I tell them, think of jobs where you are surrounded by people who tell you that you're great and that it perpetuates a God complex, and it gives you an inflated sense of self. And you also have a platform to tell people how awesome you are. And the students, my students are pretty astute and they get most of them. So typically the number one would be celebrities, right? Tell me, like think of the Kardashians, right? They're kind of like the epitome of narcissists. And therefore they perpetuate this idea among all the teenagers to be narcissists too with their constant selfies and so forth. But celebrities, their whole existence is about getting that recognition and being told how they're beautiful or talented or whatever. And their whole life is being in the limelight. And if they didn't have that, they'd be nothing. Another one's going to be politicians. Of course, Trump is the epitome, but all politicians on one level are narcissists, and they need, again, the constant praise, the constant laud from their constituency or just from common people on the street who see them and like, oh, Congressman, blah, blah. Oh, you're the best. You're the best. And they just need that constant fueling. Doctors, especially surgeons, they kind of have that God complex, right? I am better than everybody. I will save your daughter because I'm the best. I'm the greatest. And of course, they're surrounded by scrub techs and nurses who have to perpetuate that if they don't want to get the rage. Lawyers are another one. Lawyers, classic lawyers. It's the same thing. They're the king of the mountain, and they kind of dictate everything to other people, and the other people have to, like paralegals, have to do what they're told, and also the clients too. You know, they're like, I can get you off this case. I can get everybody off the case. And then surprisingly, teachers fall in one of two camps. Teachers, you either have the very sympathetic, empathetic, bleeding heart types, and we'll talk about this with narc relationships. Narcs are attracted to highly empathetic people because they're like does. They're like deers ready to be eaten by the narcs. They're just easy targets. So you either have teachers who are very empathetic, and they're the ones who will stay late and help the kids out, and their whole life revolves around teaching, and they do stuff after hours with the kids, and they'll get involved in a lot of activities, and they'll call all the parents and have, you know, really good relationships with the students and know all the parents and so forth. And then you have the narcs. The narcs don't care about the kids at all. The narcs don't have any contact or any contact with the greater community of the school, and really the only reason they're teaching is so they can pontificate and have a platform to espouse their views and just talk. And of course, they have all their sycophants around them, which are the students, and the students have to essentially tell the teacher what the teacher wants to hear because their grades, their future is essentially dependent on the narc teacher. And so they have to stay in the good graces of the narcissistic teacher. So I tell this to the students, and the students will always raise their hand and be like, oh, yeah, just like Mr. Blah-Blah or just like Mrs. Blah-Blah. And I know, of course, I know, say, yeah, you're right or you're not right. But there's definitely teachers are one of the two. You don't find a lot of teachers that are kind of in the middle. You either find teachers that use teaching as a platform to kind of indoctrinate and inculcate the kids into believing their point of view and being told, oh, Mr. Blah-Blah or Mrs. Blah-Blah, you're the best, or you just have the really bleeding heart kind of teacher. All right, the fourth one is a sense of entitlement. Because they consider themselves special, narcissists expect favorable treatment as their due. They truly believe that whatever they want, they should get. They also expect the people around them to automatically comply with their every wish and whim. That is their only value, the people around them, right, is to fill the narcissist with supply. If you don't anticipate or meet their every need, then you're useless. And if you have the nerve to defy their will or selfishly ask for them something in return, prepare yourself for aggression, outrage, or the cold shoulder, right? Because everything is one way. You're supposed to serve them. You're not expected to serve others. And really, narcs can't serve others. They're incapable of doing that. A fifth one is going to be exploit others without guilt or shame. Now, this is one of the classic signs. Now, you can go online and Google, am I a narcissist, and do tests. But one of the classic signs is lack of empathy, lack of remorse. So narcissists can never develop the ability to identify with the feelings of others, to put themselves in other people's shoes. In other words, they lack empathy. In many ways, they view the people in their lives as objects there to serve their needs. As a consequence, they don't think twice about taking advantage of others to achieve their own ends. Sometimes this interpersonal exploitation is malicious, but often it's simply oblivious. They've always been this way. They don't know any better. Narcissists simply don't think about how their behavior affects others. And if you point it out to them, they still won't truly get it. Because again, they're just soulless robots. The only thing they understand is their own needs and how to fulfill it. So anytime if you're ever accused of being a narcissist, just step back and think, do you feel bad for things that you do? Let's say you cheated on someone. Let's say you stole money from someone. Let's say you belittled or talked bad about someone. If you feel bad and you feel guilty about it, and even if you can't apologize to those people, but you feel bad about it, true remorse, then you're not a narc, because a narc is incapable of that. So that's one way to kind of look in the mirror, do a little introspection and see, you know, if I'm a narc, it's guilt and empathy. The last major one is to be frequently demeans, intimidates, bullies, or belittles others. Narcissists feel threatened whenever they encounter someone who appears to have something they lack, especially those who are confident and popular. This is one of the reasons why narcs, it's weird because they surround themselves by sycophants, but they also view that everybody, 90% of the world, is inferior to them, and they only want to hang out with other, you know, beautiful, popular, achieving people. But then they have an utter disdain toward those beautiful, high-achieving people because they see them as competition. So it's tough. It's like this middle ground. They're also threatened by people who don't know, who don't kowtow to them or who challenge them in any way. Their defense mechanism is contempt, like I mentioned. The only way to neutralize the threat and prop up their own sagging ego is to put these people down. They may do it in a patronizing or dismissive way, as if to demonstrate how little the other person means to them, or they may go on the attack with insults, name-calling, bullying, and threats to force the other person back into line. Now, we'll talk about this. This is the de-evaluation stage of a relationship cycle with a narcissist, how they do this. But again, narcissists have no inherent self-esteem. They have no inherent value of themselves. They were deprived that because of whatever trauma happened to them as a child that caused narcissism. And so they have to get their supply from other people. That's why the sycophants are around to tell them that. And everybody else is a threat. So they will constantly demean and malign people who they perceive to be a threat, either in subtle ways, or they'll just smear you and try to get you fired, for example, or try to get your boyfriend or girlfriend or wife to dump you. These people have utterly no soul because, as I mentioned, they have no remorse or compunction. That's actually something that they share with the other cousin of the cluster B personality disorders, which is antisocial personality disorder, the serial killer, for example. They have no remorse or guilt. And to a certain extent, the borderlines don't either. Okay, let's take a quick break here. Okay, so now we've gone over kind of the fundamental groundwork of what a narc is. Now we're going to go over the three cycles or the three relationship stages if you're ever involved in a narc. And this is extremely important. And I spend a lot of time with the students on this because it's important. Because if you can recognize step one, you'll back away. So a relationship with a narcissist has been compared to being on a roller coaster with immense highs and lows. And they've been described as the proverbial Jekyll and Hyde, one way one minute, another the next. People usually get into relationships for love and the need to connect and bond with others. Narcissists get into a relationship for entirely different reasons. They do not feel love, and they lack the ability to connect and form normal attachment bonds with others. This is extremely important later, especially when we talk about stage three. They're incapable of love. They are incapable, and it's very hard once you reach stage three to realize that you were just utterly used for as a narcissistic supply, but they're incapable of that. Narcissists need people more than anyone because their entire sense of self-esteem and self-worth is dependent on the admiration of others. Their emotions are a precarious balance of needing others and needing to be left alone. Narcissists feel an enormous void inside of them. And for that reason, you have to be somewhat sympathetic if their behavior and their actions weren't so pernicious. This void is ever present, and the only thing that fills it is the love and esteem of another. The fix is always temporary, though. A narcissist describes it this way, quote, "It's like my brain is constantly seeking something. It's like I'm always chasing a carrot at the end of the stick. Nothing I do satisfies me, at least not for long. I feel like I only do things because I'm supposed to, because society does it. I don't feel like I belong anywhere with anyone," close quote. Narcissists are completely self-absorbed and are oblivious to the wants and needs of others. They enter into relationships in an attempt to fill this void and to make sure that they have someone who is always available for sex, an ego stroke, or whatever need they may have. So a relationship with a narc goes through these three cycles. So the first one is what we call the over-evaluation or the idealization stage is the way I typically hear it, or like we commonly call it the love bombing stage. So the way a narc works is that they're very careful when they're choosing a target. So this is typically going to be like on dating sites, like a Match or something, they'll read through your profile. These guys are very, and girls, even though most are guys, they're very, very bright people, just like antisocial, just like serial killers. They're very bright people, and they have very good kind of analyzing skills and reading people. So they typically choose a victim based on their status. They must be attractive, popular, rich, or extremely gifted in some way to make them look better. Because remember, it's all about the narcissist and the supply that they derive. So once a target's been chosen, the narcissist will, if they know you, will do research on you, and they'll find out your favorite music, your favorite foods. They'll find out about your past relationships. They'll do research because they'll use all of this when the love bombing starts. And so what they'll do is they're hypervigilant in their pursuit and will project the perfect image that their victim wants them to be. So once upon the research, so they'll, if they find out that you were, let's say, dumped by a guy who cheated, or let's say, or even it's something like you like Game of Thrones, when they approach you, they'll be like, oh, I was cheated too. Or, and then, you know, they'll find ways to have commonality with you. Like, oh, you like Game of Thrones? I love Game of Thrones. And all of this is crafted. It's crafted. They don't care about you. They just need to entice you in with the love bombing. So the love bombing is a term that's essentially when someone comes on really strong, really fast, really fast. So a good example of this would be like 50 Shades of Grey. So when Christian Grey meets Anastasia, and you know he flies her around the world, and you know nice restaurants and all these gifts. But for the common man and woman like you and myself, it's going to be a lot of attention, a lot of admiration, a lot of praise and flattery, buying you gifts, taking you out, being extremely positive. They're going to be, of course, very sexually forward with you. They'll flirt a lot with you. And when you're with the narc, and you know, like a good example is Ben Affleck, because I remember reading a quote, I think it was a Vanity Fair article that Jennifer Garner did for them. And she said, it's like when he is looking at you, you feel you are the center of the universe. And that's the classic kind of response that a narc victim would say, is they will just suck you in. And you are just blindsided by all this flattery, and they know you so well, and you feel like you connect on every level. It's because they did research on you. And they're just blowing your senses away to get you off guard, and that's how they suck you in. So the narc's job is to make them fall in love with you as quickly as possible. So the narc is ecstatic and full of hopes and dreams. They will talk and think about them constantly. You become euphoric. You just are just in total love. The victim is likely so caught up in all the attention, is usually thinking at this point that they have found their soulmate, right? Someone who knows them so well. We like Game of Thrones. We're both, you know, Baptists. Their pursuer is exactly what they want in a partner, because the narcissist is mirroring what they've learned appeals to the target, right? The research. And they can't believe how lucky they are and that this catch is still single, right? How is this person still single? What they don't know or could ever be prepared for is what comes next. So that's the first stage, is the love bombing, idealization or over-evaluation, right? This is the sucking in. Let's just call it the sucking in stage. So at this point, you're like totally in love. You are just think you found, you know, your perfect soulmate. The idealization phase, if you're dealing with a narcissist, usually lasts anywhere from a few weeks to a couple months, just long enough for the narcissist to be confident that they have secured their target's love and devotion. Unbeknownst to the target or the victim, what they were witnessing in the early phase was a narcissistic's false self. That's not them. Again, the narcs don't have a true self. They are devoid of anything. In this second phase, which we call devaluation, the mask comes off and the narc starts to reveal their true colors. The shift could be gradual or almost seemingly overnight. Suddenly, the attention they so lavishly gave you is gone and replaced by indifference or silence. They ghost you, in other words. Days or weeks could go by and you won't hear from them. They won't return your phone calls. They don't keep a single promise, and you start to suspect that they might be involved with someone else. And here's the deal. So you're so ensnared in that when the narc starts pulling away and starts ignoring you or not responding to your texts, and this is assuming you're not living together, but narcs can do this when you live together. They just vanish, or they don't flatter you anymore. The victim feels that they did something wrong, because again, they don't know the MO of the narc. they think they're doing something wrong. So maybe I'm not having enough sex with them, or maybe I'm not cooking enough, or maybe I'm not praising enough. So then the victim will overcompensate thinking that it's them. It's them. And so they try to work harder, and the narc's like, yeah. And this is exactly what the narc wants. The narc wants to F with you, and the narc wants you off of your toes. And of course, the narc wants even more of the supply. And he'll start doing this either when he thinks that maybe you're, you know, tailing off a little, or he's no longer interested in you because there's someone else who he wants to figuratively and mega and literally tap into. So narcissists become bored easily, and what usually starts happening in their heads at this stage is that the void begins to emerge again. The high they were feeding off of is waning, and they begin to question your worthiness. That perhaps you weren't so special after all, because if you were, then the void would still be there. That's assuming that's more of a benign narc. That's not more of the malicious narc who knows exactly what they're doing. They become moody and agitated easily. The narc blames you for even the slightest transgression. They start to disappear more frequently, and they give you the silent treatment in an attempt to create distance. As the narcissist withdraws, the target starts to cling, and your demands for his attention and your need to understand what's happening grate on his nerves, right? You're like, what's going on? You're not contacting me. We're not going out. Am I doing something wrong? Do I need to buy new clothes? Do I need to do more sexual favors? And he's like, oh, God. You aren't the right one. The harder you cling, the more the narcissist pulls away. They start to blame and criticize the target for everything, treating them like an emotional punching bag. At this point, the victim, the target, is an emotional wreck. The narcissist is left without any explanation, and they can't figure out how one minute they were put on a pedestal, and now it's like they don't even exist. The narcissist is a projector, and they are projecting their emotional turmoil onto you. They feed off of other people's misery, as long as it's caused by them, just as much as they feed off of your admiration. Either way, it makes no difference to them. It is this person, this cruel, indifferent, unfeeling sadist that is behind the mask. This is the true narc. This is the true narc that's finally showing themselves, because in the first stage, that was all a ruse to get you in. Most targets desperately try to find the one they fell in love with. What they don't realize is that that person never existed. They were a facade, an act to put on by the narcissist to secure their supply, to suck out all the energy from you. The narc will take no responsibility for their actions because they simply don't care how they've cheated you or how you are feeling. Remember, it's all about them and how you're letting them down. Narcissists are not capable of forming normal, healthy attachments to people, as we've already mentioned. Those that aren't familiar with the disorder are completely at a loss to understand how unnecessarily cruel their behavior can be. The target was never more than an object to the narcissist. The narcissist isn't one to throw away a potential piece of supply, though. They will keep up this I love you, not charade, going for as long as they can until they can tap in to a new supply, or as long as you put up with it and you don't call them on it. They will breeze in and out of your life as if nothing happened, completely oblivious and indifferent to your suffering. This mind F is deliberate, and they will keep feeding you crumbs of attention just enough to keep you emotionally invested and available to cater to their every need. At some point, one of two things will happen. They'll either find a new target, which we'll talk about in the last phase, or you'll recognize the tendencies because maybe you've done some research, and you will call them on it, and then you'll walk away. If they allow you to walk away. So we're going to talk about the third phase. This is the discard phase. This is the most devastating part. So with the third phase, so the first phase is the idealization, then the second stage is... Also, I forgot to mention, in the second stage, this is when the narc starts to insult you. And not only do they pull away from you, but they start to insult you, they start to gaslight you, meaning that they'll like play games that in your head that you never said things, or that... Like for example, the narc will tell you, oh yeah, we're going to take a trip to New York. We're going to take... I keep telling you all the time. And then... when they gaslight you, you'll say, well, when are we going to New York? And they'll be like, I never said we're going to New York. What are you talking about? You must be crazy. I have no idea what you're talking about. And then you'd be like, what? Well, you did say it. And it's like, no, I never said it. You did say it. And it makes you question yourself and you essentially can go crazy. The term comes from the old movie Rebecca from the 1930s where the guy did that. Anyways, so that's part of it too. So it's not just that they pull away, but they also start insulting you and devaluing you and then they gaslight you. So the third phase, this is when they completely pull away. They completely pull away. So it's almost as baffling to watch the ease at which the narcissist can pull away from their partners. Most targets are left asking themselves, did he ever love me? Did I mean anything to him? And the answer is no. No one means anything to the narc. Women are only a means to an end, or man, if it's a female narc, to obtain that much needed narcissistic supply. Once they've tapped all that out like a freaking vampire, or they've grown bored of you, they'll move on to the next one. Now, typically the narc, though, will not move on to the next victim who they've already researched and tailored everything to until they've sucked a dropout. So they won't leave you until they find and prepped the next one. So once your usefulness runs out, you'll be discarded abruptly and cruelly without warning. Now, lots of times with narcs, they'll just ghost you. So once they've tapped it, they will block you on everything and they can't contact you. And many times they'll move, you know, if they live in, you know, where they live, they'll just leave. And so the person, the victim, is distraught. They are an emotional wreck because they still think that it's their fault, the victim's fault, because they don't know what's going on. So they think, what did I do wrong? What did I tell me? And they are emotional wreck and their self-esteem has been annihilated by the narc, by the demeaning behavior and then the cruelty and then just completely leaving that person. And so at this point, the victim is a wreck. And so this is why I mentioned earlier in the episode how the narc will destroy your trust in the opposite sex. And this is where it happens because they've shattered your view of, let's say, men. Because you think all men are like this. How can this man have done this to me? And you are just devastated to the point where you might not ever date again, or you might hurt yourself. The victim tries to pick up the pieces, and the realization they need to come to, and this is what I did when I encountered the female narc, because you have to do research, and I listened to podcasts on it, did a lot of reading, and then when I did all this reading, I was like, oh my God, this fits the relationship perfectly, to a T. It was like this great epiphany happened, and one of the biggest things that the victim needs to realize is that that person never loved you. And it's very, very hard to come to that realization that you were used, that you were used. But you have to come to that realization because that's where you go from being an abuse victim to a survivor and then from a survivor to a thriver, is that you need to come to that realization that you were used, that this person has no soul. They have no remorse, they have no compunction, they have no self-esteem, they're incapable of all this, and that you were just used, and they sucked everything out of you, and then they just discarded you like detritus. And it's really, really important. And the other thing is, once you realize that you've been used by a narc, a couple of things that you have to be on the warning for. One is hoovering. So hoovering, like the vacuum, the Hoover vacuum. So let's say that he discarded you. It's a year or two later. Then all of a sudden, boom, you get a text or contact from this person, from the narc. And this is what we call hoovering. This is, or sometimes it's called breadcrumbing too. But they'll contact you and they'll be like, oh, baby, you know, blah, blah, blah. I had to leave because I had some issues that I had to deal with, you know. They'll make up some story and then boom, they'll start stage one again. They'll love bomb you again to get you back in because of course your defenses are going to be up and you'll still be devastated and you're like, how could you have done this to me? And these people are smooth talkers. And so they'll love bomb you to get you back in. And then you think, oh my God, they're back. You accept them back in. Oh my God, they're back. I love them. And they'll love bomb you for whatever, a week or two, and until they get what they need out of you. And then they're going to discard you again. So if any of you can sympathize or understand what I'm talking about, and you've gone through this recently, just be aware that the narc might come back. They might hoover. And when they do, you cannot respond at all. Not even a text, nothing. You have to go complete no contact. So they might have ghosted you and gone no contact for a year, you know, blocking, and they're blocking your attempts. But when they contact you, you have to go no contact. Don't think about that stage one memories, mementos, and all that. Don't think about, oh, I remember when we went to the park and we went to Paris. And we No. Because at that point, you have to realize that was a ruse. That was a canard. That was a lie. All that was fake. You need to remember all the stage two, stage three crap that they put you through. And don't fall for it. But many people do fall for it. And it's horrible because you can marry a narc. And so when you marry a narc, these three cycles are repeated, rinse, lather, repeat for years. They could be in the idealization stage for, you know, 2 years. Then they could be in the devaluation stage for 10 years. Then they can discard you. And then right when you're about to divorce or leave, or once they think that you figured it out, they'll come back and love bomb you. And if you don't fall for it, or because you want to stay together because of the kids, or whatever, if you don't have that strong self-respect, you might fall for it. And so the narc always has you on the hook. And typically the narcs are going to be having affairs too. You know, they have a very high level of promiscuity and being philanderers, because again, they need to tap into various supplies, but they want to have the steady supply always there. And so that's why they're always going to be love bombing the spouse, because they can have that person there on the hook at all times. Okay, so let's take our last break here. Okay, so let's say this narcissist is in your life. I'll give you some tips here. So one, either you have done the research and during the love bombing stage, you've noticed some things. So this will give you some advice. Or if you have this narc in your life for an indefinite amount of time because they're your boss, because you can have platonic relationships with narcs and they can destroy you. Or it's a baby daddy, baby mama, or it's your parents. You know, there's a lot of situations where this can be. So as I mentioned, you know, they can be very magnetic. They can be very charming. They're typically very confident. Again, this is all to get you enticed in. So one of the things that, you know, you have to realize your needs are not going to be fulfilled. It's important to remember that the narcs aren't looking for partners. They're looking for sycophants, right? Obedient admirers that are just going to feed them the supply. So your sole value to the narc is as someone who can tell them how great they are. So you got to realize that if you enter a relationship with a narc, you'll be destroyed. But you got to realize that they're not going to fulfill your needs. The other thing is look at how they treat other people. So, you know, this is a general rule of thumb, right? When you're starting to date someone, you have to kind of look, how do they treat waiters? How do they treat staff, employees, their parents, their kids? And so that kind of gives you an idea. But if you're out on a date with someone you suspect to be a narc and they're disrespectful of others, you know, don't think that is possibly going to be turned around on you. Also, you got to take off your rose-colored glasses. You know, it's easy, especially during the love bombing stage, to imagine a life that you're going to have with this person. Like the way you project them, that you want them to be. And then, oh, we're going to have this life and jet set across the world because he's giving me all these gifts. And he's going to be charming and giving and all this. And you got to take off those glasses and not make excuses for the other behavior, the bad behavior, the gaslighting that's officially going to happen, because that ain't going to change. That's not going to change. So what can you really do? So let's say you have a narc and you're stuck with them. Let's say baby mama, baby daddy. You got to have boundaries. You got to have very, very good boundaries, because these people are soulless robots and they're not capable of true reciprocity in their relationship. It isn't just that they're not willing. They're just not able. You know, they don't see you. They don't hear you. They don't really sympathize with what you're seeing. And they don't recognize you as someone who exists outside of their own needs. So they typically, narcs will violate the boundaries of others. And what's more, they do so with an absolute sense of kind of like entitlement. So narcs don't have any problem going through your possessions. They have no problem snooping around your mail, eavesdropping on conversations, barging in without invitation, stealing your ideas, let's say if it's at work. They have no problem with that because they have no boundaries. And they may even tell you what you think and feel. It's important to recognize these violations for what they are so you can create better boundaries. And you need to make a plan. You need to make a plan. And really the best plan you can have is A, calling them on their narc behavior, because some narcs will be like, oh, damn, this person isn't an empathetic doe that I can take advantage of. Oh, they've called me on it. And they'll redirect their attack, their attention on another person, another doe. And also by creating boundaries, you know, you're just minimizing their exposure to you. So you need to have very good boundaries. And once you set the boundaries, you know, you have to keep them because, you know, the narc's going to rebel against the new boundaries and they're going to huff and puff and berate you and they're going to test your limits. So follow up with any consequences specified. If you back down, you're sending the message that you don't need to be taken seriously. Another tip you can do is don't fall for the narcissist's version of who you are. You know, they don't live in a reality, and that includes their view of people. So don't let their shame and blame game and their gaslighting undermine your self-esteem. Refuse to accept undeserved responsibility, blame, or criticism. So you got to just be very secure. Know yourself. You got to know yourself. So when they start gaslighting you or saying all these horrible things, you can say, no, that is absolutely not true. I am not that at all. Also, arguing with a narcissist is pretty difficult because, you know, they're going to prove you wrong and they're going to gaslight you or they're going to talk over you. So no matter how rational you are or how sound your argument is, they're unlikely to hear you. And so escalating it is pointless because, and this is in general with rageaholic types too. You know, if you've ever encountered a rageaholic, and I've encountered those, you know, there's no point really yelling back. So the thing is with rageaholics, if you don't yell back at all, they're like bullies, or they'll keep just heaping it on you. But if you rage back, they'll just rage more. So you just have to kind of like walk away, you know, drop the rope, as they say in Alcoholics Anonymous and all those. And all those things, you just got to drop the rope like in a tug of war. Don't waste your breath because they're not going to have an epiphany. Like, oh my God, you're right, Gregory. I am a narc and I am doing that. You know, it's very hard for them to come to that terms. And the other thing is just let go of your need of approval from the narc because you're never going to get it. You know, you got to, again, go, you got to know yourself. And so the last thing I want to mention is if you are in a relationship with a narc and you can't extricate yourself out of it because let's say it's a spouse, you got to try to make new friendships. You know, typically the narc isn't going to want you to make new friendships because you might complain to your new friends about him and then they don't want you talking to the friends because the friends will be talking bad about him or her and they'll be like, I don't want you to be friends with them. But you got to try to make new friends. You got to maybe go to support groups on your own. Try to model good relationships. So if you have friends or couple friends who are in good relationships, you know, try to spend time with them and see what a really healthy relationship looks like, because then you'll look at your own relationship with the narc and see like, oh my God, our relationship's nothing like their relationship. You know, there's not mutual self-respect and mutual giving and so forth. And and the last thing is just if you can get out, get out. Just try to get out. So my last tip is you are going to encounter borderline and narcs in your lifetime. So if anybody, and let me backtrack a little. So I did a kind of a cursory overview of narcissistic personality disorder. If anyone in the mental health field is listening, I have missed a lot of stuff, or I forgot to mention a lot of stuff here. And I apologize for that. But I just want to kind of give the overview of some of the things. But the biggest takeaway is this. If someone comes on to you too strong, and they seem too good to be true, right? Like everything that you like, they like. And they are love bombing you with gifts and telling you how you are their soulmate. And they're pushing stuff sexually on you pretty fast. And they are telling you what you want to hear. And it's just coming so fast. And if it seems too good to be true, it is too good to be true. Normal relationships take time. They take time. So if a guy, even though it's, you know, complimentary that, oh, I want to fly you to Rio right now, or I want to meet your family right now, or I want to, you know, drop everything you're doing and let's go to Hawaii. You know, even though you're like flattered, just remember, you got to have that discernment. You got to have that vigilance up, because these are telltale signs of those cluster B personality disorders. They come on strong and they're charming and flattering, and you just got to put on the brakes, take it slow, listen to this podcast. There are a couple of decent podcasts that deal solely with narcissistic personality disorder. And if you feel like something's not right, then just take your time. And if you think that they are a narc, we've already gone through the relationship cycle and how devastating it's going to be to you if you continue on this road. You need to break it, end it quickly, and then block them and move on. All right, guys, that's all I have to say. Please subscribe to this podcast and share it with others. It'd mean a lot. I've seen a good 25% intake and increase in the subscription, so I really appreciate that. Go to the website and opt in. Get a free copy of my confessions, and I can email with you if you would like to email. And as always, like the voiceover dude says, post a review, an honest review. All that helps me so much. It arguably helps me more than you giving me money for the Patreon account, because it gets me up on the ranking. So please share. Until next time, guys, take care. God bless. And bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to NPE Radio and Occult Health News. Visit our website at naturopathicearth.com. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Occult Health News and at our Facebook page at Naturopathy Earth. Please consider a donation at patreon.com/naturopathicearth. Consider subscribing to our podcast. And as always, please post an honest review on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to this. And remember the core belief at NPE. Let food be thy medicine. Let nature be thy healer. Until next time.